Check out the show in its new time slot. That's every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found records, tapes, found sound, internet insanity, and more. That's Radio Lost and Found every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Hey, weirdo! Come out and play!
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and we have a jam-packed show today. I'll be joined soon by my co-host Jen Chavez, who will be asking Dan Halstead about the Hollywood Theater's proposal to bring large-format 70mm films back to the local screen. And we'll also have filmmaker Toby Froud on the show. Toby may be best known to audiences as the enchanted infant in the 80s fantasy movie Labyrinth, but he's become a master puppeteer and teamed up with Heather Henson to produce the short film Lessons Learned. We'll also have a ticket giveaway to the shorts series of the Portland Film Festival, so stay tuned for that. But first, we're joined right now in the studio by Christy Piccio and Russ Repp from the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. And they're going to tell us all about the special events surrounding OMSI's current exhibition on animation. Christy and Russ, welcome to the film show.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us about the current exhibition. It's going to be running for a few months, and it's very hands-on, very interactive.
Yeah, so this exhibit goes over like the history, technology, and industry sides of animation, like what goes into making animated films. And visitors can explore all the different techniques that artists use to create the films, such as doing storyboarding, character creation, Foley art, and also look into like the history behind animation, what came before what we recognize as animation, and a little bit into what we do now, some special effects, green screen, how do we do some of the cool things we do with computer animation.
Well, I understand that there's some cultural education that's tied in with this. Some of the precursors to animation, such as shadow puppet theater. This is something that you're allowing adults, kids, pretty much everybody to play around with and experiment with the storytelling potential of.
Yeah, so this is coming out on the floor probably this week. We're building the theater right now. And kids and adults will be able to tell stories using shadow puppets and make their own and explore kind of like the cultural history behind that, what cultures use shadow puppets and why. It's considered a precursor to animation because they are projected inanimate objects that are animated by an artist and telling stories. We hope to be able to do a little lighting design, let kids play at playing different roles, maybe, you know, directing, be a set designer, things like that, as much as that their ability to explore will allow. It should be a pretty fun, creative activity.
Now, I understand that this exhibition has been making the rounds of museums all over the country, but OMSI originally started the early version of it back in 2005, put it on, and you've done a lot of updating since then, now that you've brought it back in 2014.
Yeah, so we've added a few things at the museum this time. We have a green screen activity that we've actually added in conjunction with the Hollywood Theater. We have a partnership with them to kind of explore animation. And so visitors can play in front of a green screen, understand that technology. We're also doing a number of activities throughout the museum where they can go to our technology and makerspace lab and explore stop motion and go a little more in depth with the green screen than you can in the exhibit hall, looking at GIF creation, some other stuff that we're doing.
You've got some events coming up that are pretty exciting. You've got an entire animation festival that's mm-hmm. going to be playing early November, the 6th through the 9th of November, and a lot of different screenings as well as at least one panel discussion.
Mm-hmm. So this is exciting, this animation festival. It's starting next Thursday, and that Thursday we have a panel.
The 6th of November.
The 6th of November.
Yes.
Sorry. And it's actually the premiere event for the Sundance Film Festival animated short film tour for 2014. So we have a couple local luminaries, Joanna Priestley and Paul Harrod from Bent Image Labs. And from Super Genius, we have Brian Provencher, and we're going to have a panel with them on the future trends in animation.
I see that Dennis Nyback will be showing some of his Golden Age cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And and Leica is participating. Paranorman's going to be playing Ernest and Celestine. We had Benjamin Renner on the show not too long ago. So there will be panel discussions. There will be other events happening throughout the coming weeks and months that people can attend. This is now, if people go to the omzi.edu website, mm-hmm. it's omzi.edu/animation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what are some other events that people can look forward to coming up?
Every weekend we have demonstrations at 11 and 2 out in the museum. And a number of these are going to be on topics relating to animation. So we'll be doing things like cow eye dissections and talking about how that relates to apparent motion and how our brains perceive animation. You know, there are a series of still frames, but we see them as motion. Why do we do that? Our laser light show, our laser lab will have talk about how we make laser light shows.
You've got to focus on the future of animation, how different platforms and venues and devices are really changing the face of animation. I know that. So that's really the science and industry part of things.
Yes. Yeah. We're doing a lot of stuff with tablets. We're trying to integrate some of that in so people can do a lot at home on their tablets with stop motion animation. You can make vines. You can do all kinds of things. There's wonderful programs that you can make
Vines being those 6-second repeating animations or films that people can see on the web, often on Twitter and other platforms.
Yeah. So we hope to allow people to see what they can do with our current modern technologies that we have in our hands.
And some things that are, you know, sort of on the edge of animation, such as slow motion.
Oh, yeah. So we're doing slow motion. We're smashing things and then playing them back in slow-mo. And so you can see in great detail what exactly happens when you drop a balloon full of paint or an egg or other exciting things that you'll have to come see.
Yeah, it's funny to think back in the days. It wasn't much more than a century ago when people weren't sure whether, say, a horse's hoofs all touched the ground at the same time. But now we can really use the technology to look at incredibly fast and minute kind of processes and really get a sense of the science behind phenomena in the world just through the use of film and animation.
That's true. Yeah, we can study nature in incredible detail. It's amazing.
Well, Christy Piccio and Russ Rep, thank you for stopping by today.
Thank you.
Once again, can you tell our listeners how to get information about OMSI's animation exhibition and all the upcoming events?
You can go to omsi.edu, and you can also call us or stop in, and any one of us can help you.
You're right down there by the waterfront, by the Southeast waterfront? And you can bike or walk by.
That's true. You can also take the streetcar now, which is pretty exciting.
Well, thank you very much. You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'm joined now by Jen Chavez, who's just paid a visit to the Hollywood Theater, where programmer Dan Halstead is working to bring back a large format 70mm film.
Whenever I stop by the historic Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland, its head programmer Dan Halstead always has something cool to show me. When I interviewed him a year ago about Hollywood's upgrade to digital equipment, we spoke in his basement film reel archive, and on the way I was dazzled to find, amongst other film geeky treasures, what I learned were the original marquee letters for the opening of Ben-Hur. Incidentally, Ben-Hur was one of several epics filmed and released not on 35mm film, but on the step up, according to Dan, 70mm. As one of Portland's chief proponents of keeping film alive in a digital age, I wasn't surprised to learn that he's leading the way in Hollywood's quest to bring 70mm projection to Portland. It'll join Cinerama up in Seattle on the list of only a handful of theaters in the country who offer this film format. The Hollywood Theater is currently raising money to take it to the finish line in time for 2015. This week, I met with Dan in yet another cool part of the Hollywood Theater to hear more. I am sitting here actually on the stage in the Hollywood Theater's main auditorium right before their largest screen, and I'm sitting here with Dan Halstead, the head programmer here at the Hollywood. Thank you for joining me again, and welcome back to the film show.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what we're here to talk about is 70mm film, and you guys are currently working on bringing that to the Hollywood Theater. I know a lot of listeners know what 35mm film is, in part due to the Hollywood's diligence in presenting 35mm screenings of classics and newer films, but 70mm is much more rare, and I, for one, have never seen a film on 70mm. What is 70mm film, first of all, and what's the experience of watching it like to you?
Well, 70mm is, I think, in my opinion, the best format that was ever created for cinema. Celluloid 35mm is genuinely viewed by cinephiles as the best way to view a movie, you know, and 70mm is just the next step up. It's, most people haven't seen it because it was a really expensive format, both to shoot on and to project, so that kept it pretty rare, but it's exciting to bring it back.
What is it? Is it a matter of like higher definition, crisper picture, or is it a bigger picture? Or
the image itself is four times the size of 35mm. So even looking at the frame, there's just such a more crisp quality to it. You know, I'm 35mm versus digital. You know, the advantage of it is there's a lot more depth to the image, and it's just a lot crisper. 70mm is even greater than that.
Wow, so as I said, you're working on bringing this to the Hollywood Theater, and I should say bringing it back to the Hollywood Theater. In an interview we did a while back, you mentioned to me that the Hollywood used to have all the gear, but some of it went mysteriously missing in the 1970s. Tell me more about the Hollywood's apparently somewhat scandalous history with 70mm.
Well, the projectors that we use in our main auditorium are the Norelco AA2 projectors that are kind of the Cadillacs of film projection. And they were designed when 70mm came out, and they run 35 and 70. And so 70mm had played in the Hollywood in the 60s and I think the early 70s. Then the theater fell into disrepair for a few decades. And during that time, I guess projectionists with sticky fingers, maybe? Who knows what happened to the parts? But they were gone. So by the time I started here and I got really interested in bringing 70mm back, it was a matter of finding all these parts for these rare projectors, which took a few years to even find the parts.
And when you do get everything together, you are going to be the only theater in Portland that offers this. And currently, you guys are undertaking a fundraising campaign to kind of take you up to the finish line. What is needed in terms of that campaign to make this happen?
Well, the original goal was $6,500 to pay for all the parts that we found, and just to get them here, and to pay for the installation, and to pay for the first screening, because even 70mm is so expensive, the shipping alone is something like $600 per film, and it goes up from there.
Holy.
So yeah, so it's really expensive just to even, you know, have one event. So we're actually really close. People have been so excited about this, they've been happy to donate, but we're not quite there. So yeah, we're hoping people can go to our website and you can donate there.
Excellent. And you're planning on kicking off programming next year, is that right? Early next year?
Yeah.
From what I understand, as you were mentioning before, a slew of classic films were filmed in 70mm before its use kind of tapered out in the 70s. But the format's having a slight resurgence with Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, for example, released in 70mm back in 2012. Can you talk about some of the films, either old or new, that you're most excited to bring on this format?
Sure, yeah. Well, classic films, I'm really excited to show Vertigo. That's the plan, is our first screening is going to be Hitchcock's Vertigo. 2001 Space Odyssey, which I've seen in 70mm, and it's amazing. Playtime, West Side Story, Ben-Hur. So yeah, quite a few classic films. And as far as newer films, we won't have it in time for Christopher Nolan's new movie, Interstellar, is coming out in 70. We're going to be opening it on 35mm next month. But then next year, Quentin Tarantino's new movie is, he's promising he's shooting that on 70, and he's going to release it on 70 a few weeks before it comes out everywhere else digitally. So obviously we're going to be pursuing that.
Cool. So one thing I wanted to ask about is screen size. From what I hear, other theaters with 70 millimeters, for example, Cinerama in Seattle have these really huge screens. How about the screen that you have here? Is this screen big enough to handle 70 millimeter capability? How has planning of that kind of worked for you guys?
Yeah, it's we have a 50-foot screen that's for our CinemaScope films, and that's the same size screen that we'll be using for 70 millimeter. We installed a new screen a few years ago, and we kept it the same size, hoping that we were going to one day have 70 millimeter back, so we didn't want to shrink it down and then have to buy another screen. So we kept the huge screen on purpose.
Excellent. One last, I guess, somewhat frank question. Why should film buffs care about making 70 millimeter happen locally? Because you know they're all listening right now. can you preach on this a little?
I would say anyone who is a real hardcore film buff is probably excited already, just hearing that we're bringing 70 millimeter back. Anybody who might be on the fence, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, we hope you donate, and if you don't, then just come watch it once we're showing it. It's the greatest cinematic experience you can get.
A totally different experience coming soon to Hollywood Theater. Again, I have been sitting here in the main auditorium of the Hollywood Theater with its head programmer, Dan Halstead. Thank you so much again for speaking with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen, and welcome back, everybody, to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and we've got a ticket giveaway coming up soon to the Portland Film Festival's short series this week at the Clinton Street Theater. But first, let's talk with one of the featured filmmakers at tonight's animation screening there. Toby Froud is most famous as the enchanted infant in the 80s fantasy movie Labyrinth, but he's become a master puppeteer and teamed up with Heather Henson to produce the short film Lessons Learned. I'm joined right now by Toby Froud. Now let's talk about this film, mm-hmm. Lessons Learned.
Yes.
You teamed up with one of the members of the Henson family, Heather mm-hmm. Henson, mm-hmm. and how did that come about?
Yeah, Heather actually saw an art show that my parents and I were doing in New York.
And Brian and Wendy Froud.
And we as a family had done this art show, and it was wonderful. You know, for the first time as a family, we'd shown together. And then Heather and Cheryl Henson came and saw the show, and they loved the work, and we went from there. She asked if I'd be interested in doing a short puppet film. She does this. She helps artists create little short films, and so she asked if I would be willing. I said yes, and better do something about it. So I went to work. So it was a wonderful opportunity, and also daunting, because you never get to do that, and obviously you sort of think, well, what could I do? I could do anything. I went, well, I'm going to do a short film. I really, really want to do Froudian style puppets once again, and you know, show the world this technique and just bring it back into the mind's eye of people, I thought. And it was to a new generation almost. And I think people are craving more puppets these days. And moving slightly away from, you know, just purely CG characters. So this is why my passion and my drive for doing this was to do that, you know, real puppets, to go and create this idea for Lessons Learned. And I it's all about imparting, you know, life's knowledge or overcoming certain trials through your life, and that you would keep with you as you grow. And so that was the sort of the idea of the story. And I becoming a father at the same time as this beginning, that was the reason for doing this, was that I knew I had to impart some sort of information and knowledge and wisdom to my son eventually and from now on. And I was scared of how I was going to do that. So I put it into a story of a way.
Well, let's talk about that. So The theme of lessons learned is passing along something of value from one generation to the next, and doing this in a visual style. I mean, visual storytelling, going from, say, a script that may be a little bit preachy, taking that to something that's entertaining. Is that something that really speaks to you?
Yeah, I sort of work very visually. I'm a sculptor or a fabricator by trade, and it's my passion too. And I come up with story ideas visually, so with scenes or with characters, and to tell an interesting story, or to be able to tell something that is poignant or very real in some respects. I think a puppet or a fantasy character is a great way of doing that, because an audience will go on a journey with a certain character like this and be okay with it. You can really show them something quite dangerous or sad or really exciting, and you're following this character. You're more likely to go with them because it's a fantasy. And yet, with your, you know, when you finish watching the film or any film like this, you take away with you, you know, the moral of it, or the, you know, the idea of it with you.
Well, I don't want to give too much away about your short film, but you're talking about fantasy, and fantasy has so many dark elements. And even, you know, as you move through the film, I'm reminded of some of the darker European stories and some of the directors, such as Jan Svankmajer or Yuri Trinka, like some of these. Their films aren't clean and shiny.
Yeah.
They're very rough hewn. And I get that sense that you love to sort of lurk in the shadows a little bit as well as shine a light on things.
Absolutely. I love it. I've always loved the dark side of fantasy and of anything. It's Jan Svankmajer is a wonderful filmmaker. I love his work. And actually his film Alice is an amazing piece that
very
I grew
dark
up with.
Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, absolutely. And I was watching that at a very young age, and I loved it. I lapped it up, because this was so strange and wonderful and indifferent, and you know, taking things from that or even from the Storyteller series that the Hensons did. They were darker fairy tales, and they were done and shown in such a beautiful way that you really don't see these days. And there are all sorts of sort of wonderful European fairy tales that we know of now, and they're all dark. You know, that's the amazing thing about them. Fairy tales are. I think the world and film are getting back to those sorts of things. You know, we're coming back to dark stories, and even Disney is doing that. And Laika is doing wonderful, dark, strange, you know, children's films in a way, or just young adult films. And they are wonderful. They always have a strange sort of dark twist to them in a way. And that's what really intrigues a lot of people, a lot of us who work on them. They aren't fluffy. They aren't light. They really, you got to get into them. They're gritty. And I like that about storytelling. I like that you can really delve into strange and wonderful things, or show glimpses of something that could be quite bigger than what you're seeing.
So you are actually, you go way back with the Henson crowd, let's say. You go back to the age of, infancy.
Absolutely, yes. I was 18 months old when I first started with the Hensons. I was as the baby in the labyrinth, and my father was the designer for the labyrinth.
Brian Froud. And what was the book that got your parents, Wendy and Brian Froud, noticed by the Hensons?
The Land of Froud, that was a book that was given to Jim, and from that, my father was hired on, and that's when they did Dark Crystal. And they started their journey together then. And it was a long journey of creating Dark Crystal, and my parents met whilst filming that and creating that movie. And after, you know, that all finished, Labyrinth continued, and they went from strength to strength and did these amazing creatures in a world using humans as well as puppets, and sort of marrying the two together. And Labyrinth was formed, and I was the baby captured by David Bowie.
On David Bowie's lap.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So Lessons Learned is playing as part of the Portland Film Festival's short series. Mm-hmm. That's tonight, actually, at 8:30 is when the block of shorts begins. And it's the Clinton Street Theater, 26th and Clinton in Southeast Portland. So you've been working closely with the Portland Film Festival, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of other short films that are playing as part of this series, mostly at the Clinton Street Theater, starting Thursday going through Sunday.
Yeah, the Portland Film Festival has been doing an amazing job, and it's very exciting to be a part of that, and to be a part of all the animation and live action and all sorts of things.
Well, Toby Froud, it's been a pleasure to have you here today. I hope you'll come back and join us some other time, maybe when you've got some other production out there on the big screen.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. In just a moment, Jen will be bringing you our monthly calendar of film events. But first, let's give some tickets away. We have three pairs of tickets here for any one screening of your choice at the Portland Film Festival's short series. That's running tonight, October 23rd, through Sunday, October 26th. And if you are lucky callers number 2, 4, and 6, those tickets can be yours. The number to call is 503-231-8032. There are blocks of short films every night, including this evening's animation screening featuring Lessons Learned, the new film from our guest today, Toby Froud. More information online at cstpdx.com. Again, the number to call to win yourself a pair of tickets is 503-231-8032. And now, here's Jen with this month's film events calendar.
Thanks, Conch. So, kicking off tonight and running through November 6th, the Northwest Film Center presents its annual program, Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film. The series' diverse roster of U.S. and international films explore filmmaking as a tool for social action, touching upon wide-ranging, thought-provoking issues. Details and a list of films are available at nwfilm.org. Also tonight, October 23rd, the Hollywood Theater will screen Sound and Chaos, the story of BC Studio, at 7:30 p.m. The documentary focuses on Martin BC, who runs the underground studio out of Brooklyn and has recorded Brian Eno, Herbie Hancock, Sonic Youth, and others there. The studio is now threatened by gentrification. Mr. BC and the film's director will be in attendance. More information can be found at hollywoodtheater.org. Also today, October 23rd, and on Sunday the 26th at the Clinton Street Theater, the Portland Film Festival presents Second Time Around, five blocks of short films from the recent Portland Film Festival. Programs include student shorts, experimental and animated films, documentary work, and more. Shows kick off at 6:45 p.m. tonight and at 12:15 p.m. on Sunday. Details at cstpdx.com. On October 27th and 28th, local collective The Cinema Project and the Northwest Film Center join to present Unfixed Terra Firma, analog films from artist-run labs. The two-night program starts at 7 p.m. each night and features work from artist-run cooperatives in Germany, Belgium, and France. More information can be found at cinemaproject.org. On October 29th, the continuing Portland Ego Film Festival presents its next installment at the Hollywood Theater. At 7:30 p.m., they'll screen Seeds of Time, a documentary about Carrie Fowler, an agricultural pioneer working to protect the world's future food supply through seed gene banks. Details are available at hollywoodtheater.org. From November 7th through the 15th, the Northwest Film Center presents its 41st annual Northwest Filmmakers Festival, featuring new works of any length or genre from filmmakers residing in the Pacific Northwest. The juried screenings will culminate in awards, and selected films will be featured in the touring program Best of the Northwest. A list of films, as well as event info on opening night and unconference and workshops, are soon to come at nwfilm.org. On November 16th at the Clinton Street Theater, the Portland premiere of the documentary Las Libres, The Story Continues, will kick off at 11 a.m. The Colombian film follows women in Mexico arrested and imprisoned for having abortions, and human rights activists working alongside them. Details at cstpdx.com. On November 24th, also at the Clinton Street Theater, the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival and, in other words, Feminist Community Center join to present the next installment of the Real Feminism film series. This month, it's a 7 p.m. screening of the documentary LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, about the Comanche activist and civil rights leader. More information is available at cstpdx.com. That about wraps it up for this month's film calendar. Thanks, and have a great month, guys.
Thanks, Jen. Well, that's our show for this month. I'm SW Conser. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, Toby Froud, Dan Halstead, and Christy Piccio, and Russ Rep from OMSI. Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration, and of course to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show, as well as our extended interviews, will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at @kboofilmshow. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, October 25th, 2014. Under Oregon state law, fish have more protection from pesticides than people. Helicopters that spray pesticides have to respect a 60-foot buffer around streams with fish in them. No such restriction exists around residential areas. The state sprays weed killer on a 165-square-mile area in southwestern Oregon. After helicopters sprayed a residential area in Gold Beach, residents began urging the state to increase regulations. Washington, Idaho, and California all have laws regulating helicopter spraying. They include buffer zones for residential areas, notification of residents near sprays, and maximum wind speed for spraying. This Friday, community leaders will meet to discuss how to best help individuals with criminal records find jobs. Second Chance Summit, hosted by Dave's Killer Bread, brings together politicians, prison officials, and business people to discuss the issue. Dave's Killer Bread is something of a trendsetter on hiring people with criminal backgrounds.